Live from the ESPN Pensacola studios, it's The Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You could be a part of today's show by texting or calling at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Texans aren't spending a lot of time at the line of scrimmage once they get up there. Hand to Mixon, cut back. Joe Mixon, goodbye. Touchdown, Texans.
Yeah, that happened several different times last night. Joe Mixon, big for the Texans. And that win, 34-10 over the Dallas Cowboys last night. And, of course, it really shouldn't be any surprise that that was the final score. I mean, let's be honest. Let's call it what it is. I mean, even we had from our sister station, News Radio 92.3, we had Bobby Rossi on yesterday to talk a little football, and we got his prediction before we let him off the phone. And he even said himself that this game was probably going to be a heavy favorite into the Texans category. And, yeah, it was. I mean, this game was – at some point you looked at the scoreboard and you're like, man, this game was close. But if you were actually paying attention to the – game on the field, it wasn't close. The Texans shot themselves in the foot. This game could have been a lot more lopsided than the 24-point differential that we had last night. But Joe Mixon, definitely massive for the Houston Texans in this game. 109 rushing yards, 3 touchdowns in the game. It's actually the first win for the Texans in AT&T Stadium, like ever. They've never won in AT&T Stadium. So some history made for them last night with that win. Again, they're just the better team right now. They really are. I mean, it's not even close. Dallas is such a bad team. Dallas might actually be – there's different tiers to the bad teams in the NFL this year, it seems like, right? You have the Jacksonvilles. You have those teams that are just – there's just no hope for them, right? And then there are the Dallas Cowboys who are – they're so bad that it's actually frustrating because they shouldn't be this bad. When you have a CeeDee Lamb, when you have a Micah Parsons, when you have a Dak Prescott when he's healthy – I know he hasn't been healthy the last couple of weeks. He's been out. But when he is healthy and he's playing, when you have all these guys in the game, you should not lose 5-6 straight in a row. Just should not happen. So there's tiers to the how frustrating certain NFL teams are with how bad they are over the course of the this NFL season. And it really is, I think the Cowboys might be the most frustrating one. Because like I said, when you got guys like CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons, Dak Prescott when he's healthy, that's quality players. But one of the issues, and we'll talk about this later, is what's added to be around them. The fact that there is no help around them. So, yeah, the Texans were the better team last night. They flexed their muscle, and they honestly should have won by more. I mean, you look at it, 9 penalties last night for the Texans, 69 yards, including the opening play of the game that should have been a, what, 77-yard touchdown or something like that, gets called off the board because of an illegal man downfield for the Texans. You can't have that many penalties. And that's been an issue for the Texans, is not just penalties, but their second half performance. So honestly and truthfully, I will say they played a good second half last night. Granted, it was against this struggling Cowboys team, but they managed to still play a good quality game in the second half. They didn't drop off. We've seen them trail off. They have led at half in 4 games this year. And they've lost 3 of those 4 games because they just fall off in the second half. So I will credit the Texans for not falling off in the second half last night. But you've also got to limit the mistakes. You got to quit shooting yourself in the foot. Right? You know that scene in the Andy Griffith Show where Barney Fife would he'd go to holster his pistol, but when he sticks it in there, he sticks it in a little too hard and it goes off and he has to jump around to avoid getting shot in the foot? That's the Houston Texans, right? They shoot themselves in the foot, or they shoot close to their foot. You got to stop doing that, though. Of course, we're talking about Monday Night Football last night as the Texans get the big 34-10 win over the Dallas Cowboys right here on the Glass Half Full. If you want to be a part of the Glass Half Full today on ESPN Pensacola, all you've got to do is text or call our studio line. Again, that number 850-623-1330, 850-623-1330. 6:30, and you can be a part of the show there. For me, when I look at this game for the Cowboys, five straight losses, and really kind of a big issue for them, five straight losses, already kind of touched on it a little bit, sort of, big plays. Their defense is giving up a ridiculous amount of big plays. Like, it's almost comical the amount of big plays that this defense is giving up. Right? Like, they gave up a 39-yarder to Ricky Pearsall on the ground. That's a receiver with a 39-yard rushing play. And then they gave up, a 45-yarder again. And then, again, like we just mentioned a while ago, talking about how the penalties are hurting Houston. How about on the flip side of that, the penalty helping Dallas last night, or else they would have had another big play given up to start that game. 77-yard downfield could have been the opening play of the game last night. Luckily, there was an illegal man downfield, so they bring the ball back. But guess what? The Cowboys defense still couldn't manage to get the stop. Houston ends up jumping out to a 14-point lead. Then finally, the Cowboys, Cooper Rush, finds CeeDee Lamb for a big play that brings it to winning 14-7. But I think that was really kind of the closest threat the Cowboys gave to actually winning that game. Because what? Then it was 17-10 from there, and then it was ended up 34-10 as the final. So the Cowboys are just a mess across the board. They're not getting any production offensively. Run game, pass game, it doesn't matter. Because it doesn't matter who their quarterback is, their offensive line does not give them time to sit back there and work through their progressions. And it's a similar reason as to why the running game's not working, because the offensive line doesn't do a good job of opening up the holes. You don't have guys blocking out on the perimeters. Guys are able to crash in and stuff the play, and it's, you know, very minimal gain at best. No production whatsoever from the offense for the Cowboys. The defense giving up big plays left and right. No wonder they've lost five straight games in a row. No wonder they can't seem to win a game even at home in Jerry's World, the stadium that was supposed to be meant for them. Even that's going against them last week with the sunshine, which was just a whole ridiculous narrative for Jerry Jones, by the way, to come out and, well, yeah, we should know where the sun is. Yeah, Jerry, you should. Funny thing was, though, if you noticed during the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight in AT&T Stadium on Friday night on Netflix, they actually had curtains up. Like, I didn't think Jerry Jones actually would put curtains up, but he did. I shouldn't be surprised by that, but I am. The Cowboys are not America's team anymore. They're America's laughingstock. And it's because of a whole host of reasons. It really is. As a matter of fact, this was Jerry Jones after the game when he was asked, you know, somebody asked him, they said, you know, how are you feeling? Like, what is your thought process? What's your mind process after these, you know, you've lost five games in a row? Where you at, Jerry? And this was what he said. Give me a second here. You got to love technology.
Well, I don't know that there's anything but the obvious, and that is that we just aren't playing very well. Happens we're doing that at home for sure. We've had a big run of home games that we haven't done it, so we just aren't playing well, and it's several things out there for all the games, several things. And so, you know, it's not really the amount of the score at home. It's not really. It's just the way we're playing.
What do you mean it's not the amount of the score at home? The amount of the score decides the outcome of the game. Yes, that matters, Jerry. The amount of the score at home, the amount of the score on the road, it doesn't matter. That does matter, Jerry. And I'm sorry, but that whole clip, that was, I just played you 30 seconds of that. I spared you. There was more to it. It was about a minute long. I played a half of it. Just a giant bowl of word salad right there. Nothing really said, except for right there at the end. Well, you know, the score on the scoreboard doesn't really matter. No. Yes, it does, Jerry. Yes, it does. You've got problems. Your team has problems. You got to fix them. Where do you go to fix them? First and foremost, as we've talked about before on the show, the mirror. It's the Glass Half Full, ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Just, my goodness, Jerry Jones, the scoring at home doesn't matter. I got to hear him say that again. I really have to hear him say that again, just because I'm not even sure I heard it correctly.
Not really the amount of the score at home. It's not really. It's just the way we're playing.
The amount of the score, it's not the amount of the score. It's the way they play. Jerry, the way you play is the reason the amount of the score is the way that it is. Oh, my goodness. I don't know. If the Dallas Cowboys want to turn things around, if they want to fix it, there are things that they can do that will help them fix it. There are things that they can look at to try to get course corrected. First and foremost, like I said a second ago, Jerry Jones has got to look in the mirror. Right? He's got to pull that Michael Jackson. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his ways. Jerry Jones has got to do that with himself. No question could have been any clearer. If you want to make a change, you got to start with yourself, Jerry Jones. I mean, come on. You got first and foremost, when you go through the offseason and you neglect the team needs. And I know I sound like a broken record because we talked about it before, but it's the truth. That's why we keep saying it. When you neglect the team needs and you don't go get the players at the positions that the team needs, yes, the team is going to struggle. It's not the innovative of – it's not whether the play calling is innovative or not innovative. It's not whether the play calling is good or not good. It's not a coach. It's not one of the guys in the locker room. It's you. You didn't go out and get the people that you needed. That's number one, where you start. Number one as to why this season is the way it is, right? It's not because, we're just not playing good at home. It doesn't matter what the score amount is at home. We're just not playing. No. You're not playing good at home. You're not playing good at the road. You're not playing good at all because you didn't go get the players that your team needs. You did not go address the issues that your team had. And because of that, now your team is lacking. Now your team is struggling. Moving forward, I think coaching changes do need to be made for the Cowboys. Because you've got, like I said, you've got CeeDee Lamb. You've got Micah Parsons. And if you're not getting production out of guys like that, then that falls on the coaching staff. It does fall on the coaching staff. And I honestly and truthfully, I will say, with the comments that were made by Micah Parsons after the game a couple of weeks ago about how Mike McCarthy can go coach wherever he wants to at the end of the season, he's worried more about the players inside the locker room. Jerry Jones can deny it all he wants to, but the fact of the matter is, I do believe Mike McCarthy is losing. He may not have completely lost it yet, but he is losing that locker room. It is slowly slipping out of his hand. And if he completely loses it, then his head is going to be on the chopping block with some of these other coaches. But I think for the Cowboys right now, I think you've got to start with assistant coaches. Brian Schottenheimer, your offensive coordinator. Mike Zimmer, your defensive coordinator. You got to look at them and give them a look of what are they doing? Why is our defense giving up so many big plays? Why is there zero productivity from our offense? Why can't we do anything? Yes, we have some good plays. Yes, we may have one or two drives that are great in the course of a game, but consistently we cannot have any kind of production whatsoever. Why is that? You got to take a look at the coordinators first. See what's happening there. And if you look at that and then you find out, oh, there's actually a bigger problem here, then, yeah, you need to start looking at Mike McCarthy. I still don't believe Mike McCarthy is going to lose his job at the end of this season. I wouldn't be surprised if he does. I don't think he will, but I wouldn't be surprised if Jerry Jones doesn't pull that trigger. But I will say this. Jerry Jones does have a tendency of taking up for his head coaches and letting his head coaches stick around maybe a little longer than they should have. Case in point, Jason Garrett. The defense rests, Your Honor. Case closed. So I think that Mike McCarthy is going to stick around. But I could definitely see some coordinator changes coming for the Cowboys for sure. And they've got to stay healthy too. That's another big key factor for the Cowboys. You've got to stay healthy. Having Dak Prescott out because he tore his hamstring completely off the bone, that's not going to help. No offense to Cooper Rush, but that's not going to help. Having Micah Parsons miss, four or five games in the middle of the season, if not more than that, I can't remember exactly how many off the top of my head he missed, but having him miss those games, that's not going to help. You've got to have all your star players, especially if the owner slash GM is not going out and helping restock this roster and helping bring in talent at positions of need, then the guys you got on there, they've got to stay healthy. You can't afford for them to go down for long periods of time. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we're going to switch gears. College football, it is that time of year. Well, it's actually the time of year for a couple of things with college football. It's firing season, and it's bowl projection season. We'll talk about both of them coming up next right here on The Glass Half Full right after this.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM is your home for the NFL primetime games on the radio. That's Thursday night football, Sunday night football, and Monday night football. Also, be sure to catch the early games Sunday mornings when the NFL is traveling overseas.
So how do you know which games we're carrying?
Easy. Just follow us on Facebook / ESPN Pensacola. ESPN Pensacola. All sports, all the time.
It's The Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome back in on this Tuesday morning, 9:20 here at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. You want to be a part of today's show? You can definitely do that. 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. And we have one of our first firings of this year in college football. There's been a couple early on. Southern Miss fired their coach back in October. I believe we've had a couple of other smaller schools make that move as well. But Tom Herman, a familiar name to college football, has been fired by Florida Atlantic. He's been spending the last two seasons there. Honestly, a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction, if you ask me. He is coming into this program and kind of taking over a program that wasn't really in good shape, wasn't in a good spot. Really kind of hasn't been since Lane Kiffin left, went to Ole Miss. But, you know, they had a guy there after Lane first left, was there for a year or two. Then they decided to bring in Tom Herman. And they thought, you know what, Tom Herman's got a great track record. And look, he did. 22-4 at Houston, 32-18 at Texas as the head coach. You got to think that, hey, would be a great option at a school like Florida Atlantic, would be able to score enough points offensively to beat just about anybody in your conference, would be able to recruit and bring in some talented players there just based off a name alone and the experience that he's got and the knowledge that he could pass down to some of these younger guys that could go to a place like Florida Atlantic and then find their way either to a bigger school or, if they're talented, go straight from FAU into the draft. So you got to think it was a smart decision. I think they just pulled the trigger on getting rid of him a little too quick. Two seasons, they were 6-16 over the course of the two seasons. So I get it. I get it that there was some struggles there. But again, this team and this organization has not necessarily been the best since Lane Kiffin left to take the Ole Miss job. Right? They had a guy there that they burned through after a couple of seasons, and then they go and hire Tom Herman. And Tom Herman's trying to pick up the pieces. He's trying to put the thing back together. And you only give him, really, you don't even give him that. It's more like a year and a half is what he got as the head coach there at FAU. So he is officially out with Florida Atlantic. Tom Herman is. But, I mean, again, you look at Tom Herman, 60-36 overall as a head coach. That's not bad. to win 60 of the 96 games you've coached, that's not terrible. It's viable to get you other opportunities at other jobs. And honestly, I look at Tom Herman. If I'm Tom Herman, I'm looking around the landscape of Power Four right now, and I'm saying, you know what? There's some blue blood programs that might need an offensive coordinator heading into 2025. I could go make my mark and set things up as an OC again and then go land a job that I really want to have. And I'm going to throw this out there. Part of the stipulation, at least, that we have heard for Billy Napier at Florida is that he has to hire an OC that can completely take over and handle the offense so that he, meaning Billy Napier, can be the CEO of that Florida football program. Tom Herman would be a guy that would be somebody that could come in and take over that offensive system, that would know how to handle it, and that would be able to say, hey, I can handle this. I got this, coach. You go be the CEO. You go worry about everything that a head coach has to worry about. I got the offense. So Tom Herman could be an option for Billy Napier if he does, in fact, move to hire an offensive coordinator. And from what I've been told by people I'm connected with down in the Gainesville, Ocala area, that is part of the stipulation of the meeting that happened about giving him another year. And then the vote of confidence coming out saying, hey, he's going to be our coach moving forward. They acknowledge there's some changes that need to happen in the offseason. They're going to give him the opportunity to make said changes. If he does and things improve, then he'll get to stick around. Bringing in Tom Herman could be one of those moves. Also, staying in the same state as FAU and Florida, Florida State. Now, there is rumors out there that Florida State's already got their coordinators. They just can't announce it yet. They've got to wait till the season is over. They've got to wait until that Monday after the rivalry weekend after Thanksgiving. So there is that rumor out there. But again, rumors in college football, we've seen them turn out to be true. We've also seen them turn out to be false. You really got to take it with a grain of salt. So if they haven't found their offensive coordinator, Tom Herman, again, could be a great option for Mike Norvell. Again, same reasons why he would work at Florida. He would work at Florida State. It would give Mike Norvell the opportunity to let go completely of the offense and know that he's got somebody in place that he can trust, who has not only been a dynamic offensive coordinator, because he was from 2012 to 2014, again, in Ohio State, he was their offensive coordinator. He knows what it's like to be an offensive coordinator at a major blue blood Power 4, Power 5 conference team. But he also knows how to be a successful head coach at those same places as well. Because like I said, 22-4 at Houston, 32-18 with the Texas Longhorns. Tom Herman could be a viable option for a Power 4 blue blood at the offensive coordinator position if they're looking for it. And there's probably going to be some other teams out there. You could very well see Kentucky looking for a new offensive coordinator. Right? There's a list of some other teams that could be on that waiting list to see who they're going to bring in as their offensive coordinator. So, Tom Herman probably going to have his pick of OC jobs, honestly and truthfully, after getting fired from FAU. But honestly, I'll also say this. I'll throw this out there. Another smaller school I mentioned a moment ago that's already fired their coach. Southern Miss. How about that? Southern Miss. Of course, we're talking about Tom Herman being fired from Florida Atlantic. Possible landing spots for him in the future right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. It is the glass half full. So, yeah, Tom Herman, he's going to have his pick of jobs, right? Whether it's as an offensive coordinator at someplace like Florida or Florida State, or maybe even going and being the head coach at someplace like Southern Miss. But again, Southern Miss would have to give him time. You got to completely rebuild that program. Rome wasn't built in a day, folks. Rome wasn't built in a day. And honestly and truthfully, I think Billy Napier and the Florida Gators are a glowing example of that, right? I sat here on this show after the A&M game earlier this season, and I said Billy Napier does not need to be the head coach at Florida. After what I've seen from Florida the last couple of weeks, I've backed off on that a little bit. I still don't know if he's the guy to get the job done. But this team plays for him. They play hard for him. And they've refocused. So it's all about giving the person time. I don't think FAU gave Tom Herman time. Wherever he goes next, if he goes to a place like Southern Miss, give him time. Something tells me you won't be disappointed. Just saying. ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. It's a glass half full. If you want to be a part of the show, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. And, of course, I am Jordan Glass, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in. Want to get some bowl projections now because we are at that time of year. We're in mid-November. Hard to believe we're already in mid-November, and we've got really just 2 weeks left in the regular season of college football. But we do have some pretty fun potential bowl matchups that I want to kind of take a look at here. And again, this is an article. If you have ESPN Plus, this is an article you can go read over online at ESPN.com. But again, you do have to have that ESPN Plus account to check it out. So be sure to log into that or sign up for it. If you don't have it, you'd like to get it, sign up for it. Trust me, it is definitely worth it for sure. Some of the bowl matchups here. How about we start with the Transperfect Music City Bowl in Nashville? The first one, first potential matchup in this is Minnesota and LSU. I think this would be a good matchup for LSU because it's an opportunity for them to get that bowl win, right? I think it would be a good opportunity for them to kind of, you know, November has not been a kind month for them. And if they finish out the season struggling, then there's going to be a potential opportunity for them to slink into a bowl game desperately needing a win. And I think playing somebody like Minnesota would definitely do that. The other potential matchup for the Music City Bowl, the Michigan Wolverines and the Florida Gators. This is, I don't know if you've ever noticed this about these teams, but these are two teams that always seem to find a way to meet up with each other in bowl games. And it's always interesting to see how it goes because it's either a really close game like it was the Outback Bowl back in 2007 where it just kind of back and forth, or it's blowouts like it was in, the Outback Bowl in, 2011, 2012, somewhere around in there. And then again, in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl just a few years ago in Dan Mullen's first season with the Florida Gators as their head coach. It is always very interesting whenever these two teams meet up on the field, and it always seems to happen in a bowl game. Florida, Michigan, I think that would be a fun bowl game, and honestly, it would be a great opportunity for each of these programs who are really struggling this year to get a season-changing win right there at the end of the season that will just launch them in a positive direction heading into that next season in 2025. So I think a Michigan-Florida one, very intriguing for sure. The Birmingham Bowl, another one for Florida. This would be Louisiana and Florida. And here's the fun thing about this. Billy Napier's old team versus Billy Napier's current team. Yes, sign me up because you want to know why? Lots of people over at Louisiana, lots of people in the Louisiana fan base are still a little bitter at Billy Napier, not because he left and took the Florida job. They understood that. They understood, you know what, he's got an opportunity to take that next step in his career and grow. We understand that. But when he left, he took a couple of players with him, including Montrell Johnson. They weren't happy about that. He took some coaches and some administrative staff from the football operations building. They weren't happy about that. So it would be very, very, very fun to see Florida and Louisiana play each other in a bowl game. I think Florida, the talent level of Florida is probably better than Louisiana, so the bowl game probably would not be close. But just on paper, to have Billy Napier going against his old team with his new current team, especially with DJ Lagway at quarterback, that could definitely be a fun storyline to talk about. And look, when you do what I do and you host a sports talk radio show, storylines are gold. So definitely could be fun to see that there. Arkansas and Virginia Tech also could happen in the Birmingham Bowl. That actually would be a great game on paper. I feel like Virginia Tech and Arkansas, very similar teams right there in that regard. The Liberty Bowl, Baylor and Arkansas. Baylor is going to be one of those teams that they needed to get to the bowl game this year. They're going to need to get to the bowl game like a Liberty Bowl. They're going to need to get there, and they're going to need to win it, right? It's just been a rough couple of seasons for Baylor, to be honest with you. So the Bears are really going to have to hope and pray that they can get into a bowl game like the Liberty Bowl. I definitely see them getting in maybe one of the smaller bowls that happen early on in December. But I think the Liberty Bowl would be a good spot for them. And I think against Arkansas, though, I think that's where I would be a little iffy. I think that would just be too tough of a matchup for Baylor. I think Arkansas would probably get the win in that one. Texas Tech and Vandy. Yeah, that's right. Vandy. We're talking about Vandy in bowl projections. Not used to that for sure, but Vandy against Texas Tech, that could definitely be a fun game for sure. Some of these other bowl projections that we've got here, the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl. How about Iowa versus Tennessee, right? Couple of blue blood smash mouth programs like to be physical and run the football. Well, Tennessee's not like that anymore. Tennessee wants to throw the football, and they want to score about 40 or 50 points in a game. This would be a very interesting matchup because of the way that, like I said, Tennessee has changed their identity of their football program. You would have a very slow, big, physical, 3 yards in a cloud of dust Iowa team going up against this track star of a team in the Tennessee Volunteers. So that could be interesting for sure, but also could be a letdown for the Volunteers if they're in the Citrus Bowl and not in the college football playoffs, because let's not forget, they're only a 2-loss football team. They're still very much in the mix for the college football playoffs. And as a matter of fact, coming up in just a little bit in the next segment, we're actually going to talk about what could happen in tonight's college football playoff rankings when it comes out after the weekend we had this past week. Texas Bowl. How about Texas Tech and Texas A&M? Again, could be a letdown game. A&M, one of those teams, if A&M beats Texas next weekend, I believe they would be in the conference championship. They win the conference championship. The Aggies could very well find themselves in the college football playoffs still. There is a path for that. They are not eliminated. So definitely would be interesting to see what happens with them in that game. If they were to play in the Texas Bowl there in Houston, would they be fired up for it? I don't know. Baylor LSU, another potential matchup for the Texas Bowl. I think that would be that would be a game that would have worst case scenario for Brian Kelly written all over it, because with the way this team is collapsing late in the season, with the way they're collapsing, if they went into that game in the Texas Bowl and they lost to Baylor, Brian Kelly's seat's not hot. It's on fire. And if you get to that point with those fans in Baton Rouge, they will let you know, right? They will see your family at the grocery store buying milk, and they will let them know, all right? They'll put yard signs for sale signs in your front yard. They'll do it. So that's one of those win-lose for Brian Kelly if they were to go into a Texas Bowl against Baylor. Yes, hey, great, we got into a bowl game. But if you lose to Baylor in that bowl game, ooh, definitely could be a rough offseason heading into 2025 for him. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we're actually going to shift gears and look at the potential college football playoff rankings, what it could look like, where teams could shift around to after this crazy weekend we had last weekend in college football. That's coming your way next right here on the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM is your home for the NFL primetime games on the radio. That's Thursday night football, Sunday night football, and Monday night football. Also, be sure to catch the early games Sunday mornings when the NFL is traveling overseas.
So how do you know which games we're carrying?
Easy. Just follow us on Facebook /ESPN Pensacola. ESPN Pensacola. All sports, all the time.
Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome back in on this Tuesday morning. It is 9:40 here at ESPN Pensacola. Just a rainy day. So I do appreciate you tuning in. Whatever you're doing, hopefully you're staying out of the rain. That is for sure. Let's get back into some college football talk right now, because obviously we've got the new ranking for the college football playoffs coming out tonight, and we're inching closer and closer. We're getting closer and closer. What are we, about 3 weeks away from when we talk about this happening? It's actually going to be the actual playoff ranking for the top 12. So it's no longer going to be a what-if scenario. It's actually what we could see be the final 12 teams that get into the college football playoff. Real quick, just to kind of give you the results of the top 12 teams, Well, we'll give top 13 because we'll include Boise State in there, because technically Boise State, even though they're ranked 13th, would get into the college football playoff as they would be that highest-rated conference champion of the G5s. So they would still get in, then Georgia would drop out. It's crazy talk, I know, but that's the way it would happen. So let's go ahead and run down, remind you what happened in the games over the course of the weekend. Oregon, they barely squeaked by Wisconsin on the road, 16-13, the final in that one. Ohio State, no problem with Northwestern, 31-7, the final in that one. Texas, a little bit of a scare against Arkansas, but they hold on 20-10. Penn State has no problem with Purdue, 49-10. Indiana was on a bye week. BYU lost to Kansas 17-13. Tennessee lost to Georgia 31-17. Notre Dame beat Virginia 35-14. Miami was on a bye week. Alabama beat Mercer 52-7. Ole Miss was on a bye week. Georgia beat Tennessee 31-17. And Boise State took care of San Jose State 42-21. So that's the outcomes. That's the scores that we had of the games from last week with the top 12/13 teams in the college football playoffs. And I just want to run through here. Obviously, Oregon at number one, they're going to stay. Ohio State at number two, they're going to stay. Texas at three, Purdue at four. Here's where it gets fun. Because after that, you have Indiana, who had a bye week, BYU, who lost to Kansas, Tennessee, who lost to Georgia, and Notre Dame, who beat Virginia 35-14. So here's what I would do if I'm the committee. I'm looking at this, and I'm saying Indiana with a bye week, if I drop them, I'm only dropping them one spot, so they would go from 5-6 at the worst. So Indiana still very much in the mix. Massive game for them coming up this weekend in Columbus against Ohio State. So we're gonna forget about Indiana for a second because of their bye week. BYU at number six. I am actually going to drop BYU all the way down to that spot where Georgia was. So I'm going to put BYU at 12 following that loss to Kansas, 17-13. So I'll have them go from 6 to 12 in this playoff ranking. Tennessee at 7. I will have them go from 7 to 9. And I will move up Notre Dame. And I will move up Alabama. And I will move up Georgia. So as I'm talking about this here, I'm actually writing it out on a piece of paper. So you actually are hearing me work this out. I didn't work this out ahead of time. I show prepped. I looked into the notes. I looked into the games. I thought about it, but I did not actually write down my top 12 because I want to go through it live with you. So I'm putting together my top 12 live with you right now here on The Glass Half Full, which, by the way, if you want to chime in and be a part of it, you can do so. 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. We are putting together our top 12 for the college football playoff right now. So we have at one, we have Oregon. At two, we have Ohio State. At three, we have Texas. At four, we have Penn State. Now we have that five spot where we'd forgot about Indiana. I look at Indiana's schedule up until this point. There's not a lot of quality wins there. I'm not seeing anything there that absolutely knocks off my socks. So right now, I'm looking at some of the teams that I said that I'm moving up. I'm looking at Notre Dame. I'm looking at Alabama. I'm looking at Georgia. And I'm trying to say, who deserves to be in this five spot? Is it Indiana? Do we leave Indiana there after the bowl game, or do we move up one of those other teams? I say we actually move up one of those other teams. I'm putting Notre Dame at five. I'll put Indiana at six. Then at seven, we are going to have... A lot of people are going to be mad at me with this. At seven, I don't know, because like I said, we're doing this on the fly right here, and this is the reason I wanted to do this on the fly with you live right here is because I wanted to kind of hear you hear me do this, so maybe you hear the conversation that's happening behind closed doors all through the day today, heading into tonight when we find out who the top 12 are going to be. Because this is the type of conversations that the committee's having. They're going to look at Miami and Ole Miss off of bye week and say, even coming off of a bye week, because I was about to put Ole Miss at 7, right? I was about to put Ole Miss at 7 ahead of Alabama, ahead of Georgia, ahead of Miami. Because I really do feel like when Ole Miss is playing really good football, like we saw them play against Georgia, when Ole Miss has it going, and they are clicking on all cylinders, they are a really good football team, and they are really hard to beat because they are going to score points. I was very impressed with the way that Ole Miss played in that game against Georgia. I just can't bring myself to put them at number 7, though. I think Ole Miss is going to be one of those teams that's going to get in if they win out. That's if they win out, including a potential appearance in the conference championship game in Atlanta. But at 7, I've got to go Alabama at 7. I'm going to go Alabama at 7. Going to move them up to 7. So we'll put Alabama at 7. We will have – I will put Ole Miss at 8. I will drop Tennessee down to 9, like I said. And then at 10, I this is where it gets very interesting. At 10, you got to bring SMU back into the picture. I think you've got to bring SMU. SMU is going to get an opportunity to get into the ACC championship game. They're going to get an opportunity to play Miami. And I'm actually going to put them ahead of Miami in this situation right now, because I think head-to-head right now, I think SMU would beat Miami head-to-head. So I'm going to put Miami at 11. Yeah, that's right. I'm dropping the Canes that much after a bye week. Because here's the thing. I am still not impressed with what I've seen from the Hurricanes. I'm just not. I'm still not impressed from what I've seen from the Hurricanes. So I'm dropping Miami down to 11. And the reason I think head-to-head right now SMU beats them is because SMU is going to score 40, 50 points against that Miami defense. Can Cam Ward keep up? We've seen Georgia Tech gave the blueprint of how to rattle and get to Cam Ward a little bit. SMU's defense is not a bad defense. They're going to be able to put the pressure on Cam Ward and make him force some throws, make him make a couple of mistakes. And you couple that with the fact that their offense, like I said, is going to be able to score with just about any defense they're going to go up against, especially one as bad as Miami's has been this season. I'm going to put SMU over Miami. SMU at 10, Miami at 11, and then I'm going to put Boise State at 12, simply because, look, I think putting Boise State, you're just asking for teams to have a repeat of Florida State a year ago where there was a team that was upset that felt like they should have got in, but they didn't get in. If you rank a Texas A&M or a Colorado at 12, but then you have Boise State at 13 behind them, guess what? That Colorado team, that Texas A&M team, they're not getting into the college football playoff because that 13th-ranked team there with Boise State being the highest-ranked G5 team would get that final spot. So I'm putting them at 12 just to avoid any issue there. And then at 13, I'm going to put – actually, at 13, I would put Colorado. I think Colorado is on track to win the Big 12. If they do that, that's going to give them an opportunity to get into the college football playoffs. And then at this point in time, I'm putting A&M. So that would be kind of my top 12 with two bubble teams right now, looking at Oregon at 1, Ohio State at 2, Texas at 3, Penn State at 4, Notre Dame at 5, Indiana at 6, Bama at 7, Ole Miss at 8, Tennessee at 9, SMU at 10, Miami at 11. I realize now I just left out Georgia, so let's actually change this here. So I am actually going to move some things around here. Again, this is why I wanted to do this live for you, because this is what happens with the committee, right? Because the reason I wanted to do this, I hear so many people yell that they could be a part of the committee because it's so easy. You just go in there and you pick the 12 best teams. I've just proven that it's not. I'm just one dude sitting and talking into a microphone by myself. Imagine when you put a whole committee of 9, 10, 11, 12 people in a room together and you shut the door. How many things are going to change? How many variables are brought into it? So many people want to say, oh, it's easy to be a part of the committee. I think I just proved live on ESPN Pensacola here on the Glass Half Full. It's not as easy as it looks. It's going to be very interesting to see what our top 12 is this afternoon when it comes out on ESPN. And, of course, we will talk about it right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM 99.1 on Thursday. Obviously, no not going to be talking about it tomorrow because Tomahawk talk. We'll talk about it. I don't know. There is about four or five teams right there towards the bottom. Once you get past six, it is very muddy. We'll take a quick timeout. That was tougher than I thought it was going to be. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll wrap things up with your headline roundup right after this on ESPN Pensacola.
Hey, if you own or manage a business in the greater Pensacola area, how would you like to get your business in front of men ages 25 to 54? Well, that's who listens to ESPN Pensacola.
Hey!
Okay, men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah.
Excuse me?
And Jill. Whether it be a radio ad with ESPN Pensacola or online through ADX Digital, we can come up with the best solutions for you. Get in front of men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah and Jill.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com, click on the sales opportunities.
The Rich Eisen Show, on weekdays after Greeny, 11 to 2, on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome back into the Glass Half Full. Getting ready to wrap things up here with our headline roundup where we go through the top headlines in the world of sports. And we will start off. Jerry Jones disputes the notion that Mike McCarthy has lost the Cowboys locker room. Yeah, we've already discussed this earlier on today's show. Yes, he has. He may not have completely lost it. He may still be completely in the process of losing it, but it is started. When you have Micah Parsons making the comments like Micah Parsons made a couple of weeks after a loss, you've lost five or six straight games. You're not looking like you're going to be any better anytime soon. Yes, Mike McCarthy is losing the locker room. He may not have completely lost it yet, but he is definitely in the process of losing it. I think Jerry Jones just in denial there. Of course, again, he did give us the soundbite of the day with score on the board or the score at home doesn't matter. The total of the score at home doesn't matter. It's how we play. Score matters, Jerry. Score matters. That's why you have those ginormous TVs in there that have the numbers on them. That's to keep score because the score actually does, in fact, matter. Joe Mixon carries Texans with three touchdowns and 109 yards in the 34-10 win over the Cowboys. Yeah, big night for him. He's kind of been off and on for the Texans this year. They probably would love a little bit more consistent play from him if they could get him to close out the last, 7 weeks of the season like he did last night against the Cowboys. The Texans will be a very dangerous team and a very hard team to beat. That is for sure. Brock Purdy, one of the next players for the 49ers to be added to an injury list. He's dealing with some shoulder soreness, so he is listed as questionable at this point in time moving forward. Obviously, it's shoulder soreness, so we'll just have to see if that soreness gets a little better over the course of the week. Might see him play, but very well could see him sit out this upcoming Sunday. So if you have him on your fantasy roster, act accordingly. Pirates ace pitcher Paul Skenes wins NL Rookie of the Year. He's a fantastic pitcher. He's definitely was taking Major League Baseball by storm. He's been taking social media by storm. Him and his girlfriend, Livy Dunn, who is the gymnast at LSU, who is another phenomenal athlete. Their kid is going to rule the sports world one day. It's going to be able to throw a 90-mile-per-hour fastball and do a backflip off the mound and earn a 10 from the judges. I don't know what to tell you. That's going to be incredible. Congratulations to him. Ovechkin scores two goals but does have to leave in the game last night with an injury that is crucial for them. He has been a big part of their season so far. Damian Lillard coming back from a concussion hits the game-winning layup for the Bucks. And the Pop-Tart Bowl, they are adding more mascots that are edible. Yeah, they're going to have Wildberry Hot Fudge Sundae and a mystery flavor debuting at this year's 2024 Pop-Tart Bowl. It's got to be my favorite bowl mascot. Sorry, Duke's Mayo. Pop-Tart wins it for sure. That's going to do it for today's show. Tomahawk Talk coming up tomorrow. Greeny coming up next.